Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher, 8:06 on this Tuesday, July 13th, 66 degrees here in Old Town Park City. Partly cloudy skies, and on the phone with us from the ABC Forecast Center, meteorologist Cesar Cornejo. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie. It is a beautiful morning out there so far in Park City. We're seeing a little bit of cloud cover. It should help at least wash out some of that smoke for the day, and we're hoping that these chance of showers will too. We expect to see a high of 89 degrees. We do see the possibility between the afternoon hours of seeing some possible showers and thunderstorms. So keep that in mind if you're going out to recreate, a breezy afternoon also. Tonight, we expect to see the showers diminish as we lose our daytime heating. And then we see a return of the smoke kind of lingering, not as bad, luckily for us. Partly cloudy skies, low around 60. And then by the time we get to Wednesday, we start to see an increase in storm chances for us towards the afternoon hours. We see mostly sunny skies before that, and we'll have a high of 85. Again, slightly breezy for us during those afternoon hours. We'll see that on Wednesday, we have about a nice little chance of showers, mostly towards the early evening time. Patchy smoke still remains for us. We're hoping that these showers do help break up that smoke for us, and we'll see a low of around 59 starting to cool back down for us. Thursday, we expect to see again another round of shower chances for us, and mostly towards the afternoon hours. Before that, will be mostly sunny skies, a high near 83 degrees. And going into Thursday night, we expect to see that we have those storm chances also still lingering into the evening time. Not much more than that as we go into partly cloudy skies with a low of 59 degrees for us. Friday, slight chance of some shower activity again in the afternoon. We have that monsoonal moisture on tap as that high pressure system continues to just funnel that in for us. Mostly sunny skies, high near 86. Friday night, we start to dry out. We'll see partly cloudy skies with a low around 60. For this weekend, we're looking a lot better, where we'll have temperatures ranging around the 80s again, mid-80s to upper 80s for Saturday, with sunny skies. Will be a perfect day to go outdoors, low around 61 for Saturday night. Again, another sunny day on Sunday, where we expect to see a high of 89. Great time to be outdoors. Partly cloudy skies on Sunday night with a low around 63. Monday, we see the return of a little bit of moisture activity in the form of a slight chance of showers. We'll see a high near 90 degrees with mostly sunny skies. From the ABC Pinpoint Weather Center, I'm meteorologist Cesar Cornejo. Over to you, Leslie.
All right. Thanks, Cesar. Well, stay tuned. Coming up on the local news hour this morning, I'll be talking with Park City Board of Education member Wendy Crossland and CEO Mike Tanner with an update on Building Green. Jocelyn and Chris Arndt, brother and sisters, they're performing at the Eccles Center Saturday night. Park City Rotary Club member Tom Kelly with details about the return of the Miners' Day celebration, and the executive director of the Christian Center of Park City, Rob Harder, with an update on some of the events that they have got coming up. Taking a look at some local news now, Wasatch County Manager Mike Davis has stepped down from his position as county manager to accept a new role as the county's first ever MIDA coordinator. Last week, the Wasatch County Council confirmed Davis as the new coordinator and naming Assistant County Manager Dustin Graybaugh as interim county manager. MIDA, the Military Installation Development Authority, is the state agency that's building the Morale, Recreation, and Welfare Conference Hotel at the base of the Mayflower Mountain Resort. The resort is being developed by New York City's Dell Development Company and its founder and CEO, Gary Barnett. Nearly 6,800 acres of property in Wasatch County is contained within the MIDA project area. In his new role, Davis will serve as liaison to all of the service district MIDA works with in the Jordanelle Basin, including the Jordanelle Special Services District, the Fire District, and the Recreation District. He says he'll review contracts to make sure that the county's special services district are well represented. He'll also keep a close eye on any state legislation involving MIDA and affecting Wasatch County. Wasatch County Council member Mark Nelson told KPCW that the MIDA project area is massive and will be developed over the next 5 to 10 years. He says it was time to have someone from Wasatch County oversee all of that.
Almost every department of Wasatch County is intimately involved in that, in all the services that we provide for that project area. And because it has such a large and significant both operations and financial impact on Wasatch County, we thought that it was very important to have a qualified coordinator to make sure that we're working very closely and very effectively with Extel and other developers and with MITA themselves to make sure that we both serve them well and protect the financial interests of Wasatch County.
Davis says that the role is a natural fit as he's been working on the MITA project since the very beginning.
I think the council is looking for some different direction in the manager's office, and so this was an opportunity to do both things. They've been talking about trying to get somebody that could just oversee all the MITA handlings exclusively because it's becoming such a big thing with the activity that's going on. And so I think it was an opportunity then for the council to do both things, and that's fine. I've had a long run as the manager, and I'm grateful for all I've been able to do.
Property values within the project area have been frozen, and the so-called increment of all future and increasing property valuations now go to MITA to finance the MWR Hotel and all of the other development objectives of the authority. Davis added that hundreds of parcels within the project area will change status as they are developed, and he'll be tracking this increment to make sure that the taxes the county receives are the taxes it's entitled to. Nelson says the council feels that Davis is uniquely qualified to take on this new position, given his financial and engineering experience and knowing all of the players involved. At the same time, Wasatch County loses its manager, while it's one of the fastest growing in the country. Nelson says that interim county manager Grape Bow will steer the ship for now.
One of the reasons that we feel confident that we can do that is because our assistant county manager, who's now functioning or will be functioning in a couple of days as the interim county manager, Dustin Graybaugh, is very capable, and we feel like he'll be able to carry us through this search process and until we name a new county manager. And of course, we have the other advantage that if we need to ask a question or get a bit of consulting, Mike Davis is not too far away.
Nelson says the county will be seeking a new county manager soon and that he is hopeful that Graybaugh will apply. He expects that there will be plenty of interest in the position. Well, the Park City Board of Education held a special work session June 29th to discuss the building cost originally estimated by the consultants with projections of an additional $24 million to incorporate so-called LEEDS green building certification. The school board thinking that might be just too much. On the phone, I have the school district COO, Mike Tanner. In the studio, I have the vice president of the Board of Education, Wendy Crossland. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning. Thanks for having us.
Yeah, Mike, you there?
You know, the pesky mute button gets you every time, doesn't it?
Okay, Mike, you can hear us then? Okay.
I can, thank you.
Okay.
Good morning.
Good morning to you. So as we start to see kind of the prices of lumber come down, mm-hmm. Mike, is that going to make a difference in what the school district wants to do here? Would that then free up perhaps more money for green building if the cost of other materials should come down?
You know, the cost estimates that we're using were initially put together by MHTN about a year ago. So they didn't really include the post-pandemic spike that you saw in lumber. And a large amount of the material that will be used will be non-lumber type things. It'll be metal and masonry and those kinds of things. So I don't think it's going to materially impact the bottom line for us.
Okay. So, Wendy, the board, I believe, has decided that LEEDS certification is too costly, but that you can still use LEEDS silver practices to proceed with the master planning projects?
Yeah. So my understanding, the process of the certification, the process of going through the review and the cost of that itself to get the certification up on your wall would be something that we would consider. Our goal is to build towards the LEED Silver standard, and whether or not that certification process we pay for, which is costly, and we in our kind of fiduciary duty don't want to spend money on unnecessary things. So we have every intention of building towards that certification, whether or not we have the certificate on the wall or not is the discussion.
Yeah. So you had mentioned a concern, though, that you believe that the school board needs to reach out, especially to the students who solicited the school board, to make sure to include green and sustainable building practices in the expansion. So what do you tell them now?
So we are in alignment with their goals. We really are. We are so grateful what they brought to us, really impressed with their hard work and their passion, and we never... We feel super aligned with the city, with the county, with the idea of clean energy. What happened with the resolution brought to us is not that we are not in alignment and committed to clean energy, but our duties are, and we have a responsibility and a duty to the sustainability in this master plan, through this master plan, and we hope to continue to work with them to establish how that, what that looks like for us, given our other duties. We have duties beyond sustainability. And there, again, we are working on a resolution that includes a more embedded and specific to Park City School District plan for our master plan that leans in very heavily to clean energy. And Mike can speak more specifically to what that looks like and specifically, but we are super grateful for the students, and we plan to continue to work with them and get to this place. We have the same commitments.
Okay, so Mike, can you talk a little bit about what the commitments the district is going to make when it comes to green building?
Sure. You know, when the students first came to us, they came with some goals that were kind of global and developed in coordination with the Sierra Club. Their first was to purchase clean energy primarily off of HB 411, which is what we hope to do by the year 2030. And then to eliminate all petroleum sources or dirty sources of energy use by 2040. And we initially agreed in concept with the students, but we were looking for a way to dovetail that into our planning. You know, the district had always worked with a very green perspective and a green lens, has been doing it for many years. So it was just kind of a natural evolution for us, and the students kind of brought it to point. And we were just looking for an opportunity to craft it, to dovetail it into our master facility planning. And so it was just a natural time for us to align everything with the county, the city, our personal goals within the master facility planning process. And so we ended up coming up with four basic goals, and we're still in the process of fleshing these out and getting them in a form that perhaps will take a resolution. But our first piece was to look at House Bill 411. And as soon as we can purchase clean energy off of that availability, we were planning on doing that. We felt that was the biggest step we could take, and would get us about probably 80% towards our sustainability goals. Our second, as Wendy mentioned already, was to build towards the LEED Silver standard. And we're planning on doing that anyway, but we're going to formalize that and put that information out to our architects for their planning purposes. And our third was really kind of a crucial piece, too. It was, despite all your conservation efforts, if you don't have an envelope of your building that's very efficient, all is lost. You're not doing yourself any favors by becoming more efficient if your building isn't efficient. So we were planning on building towards an energy use index, which is really just a measurement of how efficient your buildings are, of 35 or less, and according to the industry standards, that's a pretty aggressive schedule for our new construction. So we're going after that, and then eventually we hope to transition our all clean diesel fleet of buses towards electrical or other means of propulsion as the technology improves, as prices come down, as it becomes a right fit for Park City.
Yeah, realistically, I mean, are there electric buses capable of navigating our hilly neighborhoods during winter conditions?
There are, but it's a price trade-off right now. The technology, as I said, is getting better. The prices are coming down, but right now the diesel fleet that we're using is the most operationally efficient. And by the way, it's actually very green efficient, too. Each one of our buses is ultra-low emission diesel. They take about 35 cars off the road each. They put out less emissions than a car does. And so as an interim step, we're comfortable there, but hopefully we'll study this and put an eye on transitioning perhaps to electrical in the future.
Okay, and then this House Bill 411 that you referred to, which basically allows municipalities and school districts to buy into this renewable grid, something I know that Summit County, Park City, and the resorts are paying for to build out in the Western Desert. And that's something that you also contribute to?
Not contribute to at this point, but certainly have the opportunity to purchase off of, as Summit County and Park City are members of this consortium, and that grandfathers us into allowing us to purchase off of that grid.
Okay, so what sort of timing are we talking about? I mean, it sounds like that's going to be available well before 2030.
Right, and that's one of the things that we shared with the students early. So we might not be able to hit your second goal right away for a number of reasons, but the first goal we might be able to get within a year or two. And so that gave the students some hope, and we were certainly in alignment with them on that. And there was no question we would go that direction if it made sense for school districts. We just wanted to have a chance to step back, look at the pricing, look at, you know, what it would take to get involved, and align with the county and the state, and or the county and the city. And that's where we're at.
All right. So we had, again, projections of $24 million to incorporate this certification. By just incorporating kind of the practices, I mean, what does that save us?
You know, we chose the $24 million was really just a plug number. It was $75 per square foot for our new construction, which is approximately 325,000 square feet. So we chose, you know, we have very efficient systems in place for our existing structures, and we plan to transition to the most efficient as those age out. But we did not feel that the $24 million was enough to go after each one of the systems in our seven facilities and take those to the next level at this point. So the money was better spent, we felt, as a fiduciary to the taxpayers, on our existing structures that we were building. And so what they'll buy you are things within the LEED certification, which are, this LEED looks at six different areas of examination for the certification. And so they'll look at the sustainability of the sites, they'll look at water efficiency, they'll look at energy use and atmospheric type things, materials that are used, and that they're no off-gassing, sustainably developed, those kinds of things, indoor environmental air quality, which we already look at very robustly within the district, but we'll ensure that that's all up to speed and that the lighting in the districts is as natural and as available as possible. And then there's extra credit that goes into that certification area that ensures that you're in alignment with your county, in alignment with your city, and also any statewide goals that may be out there. So it's a pretty intensive review process conducted by professionals who are trained in this field, and they'll drive us towards the most sustainable construction that we possibly can have.
Yeah, I guess my question is that are we saving $24 million by not doing the LEED certification, or are we just using the money to kind of spread it out to do more green building? Is there a savings? I mean, are we reducing that $25 per square foot?
Yes, we've eliminated that $25 per square foot and taken that off of the proposed request for the bond. So initially we were around $142 million, and now we're down to about $117 million in a fiduciary responsibility. But that wasn't a diversion away from our green initiative. You know, we were on a green pathway long before that, but with House Bill 411 getting us about 80% of the way there, in purchasing sustainable clean energy off of the Rocky Mountain Power Grid, we felt that that got us most of the way there. And when we couple that with a LEED certification, that was getting us another step in the right direction. And we thought that the $24 million additionally, at this point, we weren't going to use just because we were getting most of the way towards our goal without it.
Okay. And Wendy, when does the school board pull the trigger then on this?
Well, our next meeting is August 17th. And between now and August 17th, we have three finalists for the design right now. And between now and then, we'll finalize who will be doing this work. And then in the August 17th board meeting, we expect that we'll consider like this resolution and the final plan and where we are headed from there for a possible November vote.
A bond election vote is what we're talking about, right? So that's, do you have to make that decision on the 17th?
I believe we will be making that decision on the 17th. I think we are going to be, between now and then, we are down to the three finalists that actually this week will get, will be putting together their bids, and interviews will be done in early August to confirm who that will be, which design team will be doing that.
Okay.
So we are...
And the plan at this point, I mean, I don't know what's going to happen on the 17th, but the plan is on August 17th to go for that full amount at $117 million?
I think that's still to be determined exactly. We're in the process of confirming all of that. And this potential resolution and the recommitment to show the clean energy that we're committed to and the sustainability and working with community groups between now and then and throughout this whole process is a necessary part of getting this finalized and what we want to propose to the taxpayers and get moving on this.
Okay. And again, we do have plan B that if in fact the bond was not approved at whatever amount, that the board is ready to move forward with lease revenue bonds to at least get ninth grade into the high school?
Yeah. We have plan B plans working in the works, but our focus is on getting this accomplished.
Okay.
Yeah.
So part of the challenge with the bond, was it 2015 already, was that there was some concern that people didn't get enough information. Do you feel like you have gotten that much information out, especially when we're talking about summer months and a decision being made like that?
Well, and a post-COVID year. Well, not post fully, but yes, I think I've been so grateful and impressed with the integration of community groups in this process. I think there's been a lot of input that was certainly a focus for the district, and in developing our priorities, those came from very organically from working with the community and different community groups. I think there's a continued collaboration happening all the time with this, and I feel that there's been a really concerted effort, and it's been well received to work with different groups around the community who've been part of this. I think there's unquestionably been a year, this year that was so complicated, and everybody was diverted trying to recover a year where we got to still send our kids to school, and we were focused on making that happen as safely as possible. But yeah, I feel that we have worked in really close collaboration with lots of groups. There's been lots of great input, lots of different work sessions, and those continue. They're continuing throughout the summer. They're continuing operationally, and we're taking lots of input and also looking at the broader context of what, you know, the fiscal duty, the responsibility, our responsibility to support at the end of the day students and learning, and that's the goal.
Okay. Real quick, I wanted to ask you about an article that was in the Salt Lake Tribune yesterday talking about the labor shortage potentially affecting the education sector. What are you hearing? Anything? I mean, are we doing good? I mean, we pay our teachers best in the state in terms of at least starting teachers.
Yeah, I will leave the specifics and response of that to Dr. Gilday and the team. I know broadly, there's a labor shortage, and there's been a lot of movement in the world of education, especially given last year and the challenges that it posed. But we are, our admin has been working really hard to get school and hires ready for the fall, and I will be ready. And I know that we're in the process of lots of interviews right now, and they're working really hard to make sure that we're ready to go.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. That's Park City Board of Education Vice President Wendy Crossan, along with CEO Mike Tanner. Thanks so much for your time, you guys.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
KPCW News Time now. Jocelyn and Chris Arndt are sibling blue rock music artists who will be performing at the Park City Eccles Center this Saturday night. They both join me now on the phone. Good morning to you.
Hi.
Good morning.
How's it going?
Good, good. So let's see. Start with you, Jocelyn. Is it going to be just you two, or do you have a band that joins you?
We have a full band with us. It's going to be a full rock show. We're so excited.
Okay. And can you give us an idea of what your sound is?
Yeah, so we do basically all original music. You can expect to hear a couple of covers, but for the most part, it'll be completely original, and it's kind of like indie blues rock. So there's some harder edge stuff and, you know, some softer stuff, just a good mix. So it'll be really, really nice to play in front of some people again.
Okay, so is it all original music, or do you guys do covers, or...?
We do a couple covers here and there, just, you know, stuff that has inspired us and we want to try to cover ourselves. But most of the time, we write and perform our own original music. And Chris and I write all of our music as a brother-sister team. So.
Okay. And then maybe just talk a little bit about your background. I'm guessing you both took music lessons and then at some point decided you were going to form a band together?
Yeah, so we're siblings. We grew up in the same household, and we picked up music lessons when we were in elementary school, but basically there weren't that many rooms in our house, so we decided to put all of our music gear in the same room, and so we kind of just had to learn the same songs, or we had to practice at different times, which was way too annoying. So we just started playing together from a really young age, and then grew up doing it. We formed a band in middle school and just fell in love with writing our own music and have just been doing everything we can ever since.
Okay, well, it looks like you've got a bunch of shows lined up. Full summer ahead?
Yeah, we do. We actually, where were we last night, Chris?
we were in Chicago last night.
Yep, Chicago. Before that, we were in Wisconsin and Nebraska. And we've got, after you guys, we've got like Pennsylvania, New York, West Virginia. Our first ever show in South Dakota is coming up this week. And, yeah, we're kind of all over the place, which is really great. After a year of not playing anywhere, it's very, very nice to go visit places and see real human faces again.
Yeah. I mean, I've heard about a lot of musicians just kind of doing the live act via, you know, Zoom or something, but it's just not the same. What did you guys do when you couldn't perform before in front of live audiences?
So I think like everyone else in the universe, we turned to streaming, and we streamed as much as we could. I think our philosophy was, you know, you can't go into recording studios, you can't play live shows, you can't see people in person. So let's just make as many connections as we can online. And there was actually, for a pretty long period, we were streaming every single day, 7 days a week. And we ended up building like a really, really fun, awesome, like super wholesome community online of people all over the world that just, you know, we can go on a camera and they'll come on and they'll comment a few times, and it's really, really awesome. They're just a bunch of really nice people. But that, you know, as amazing as that was, I always tell people, I feel like I'm really glad that this whole thing didn't happen before the age of streaming, because then I have no idea what I would have done. But like you said, streaming just is not the same as live shows. So now that we can go out on tour again, it feels like the world is on its way back to where we want it to be.
All right. So I think I read that you guys have been in Park City before. I think it was for the Sundance Film Festival.
Yeah, we got to stop into that and play a couple acoustic sets back in, gosh, it was a while ago. It was like, I think I want to say it was like 2015. And we were kind of, it was our first time in Park City. And it's just a beautiful place, and there were all these like beautiful people there. We were kind of like starstruck. I think we had just graduated high school, so we were just like, what's happening? But I think I don't know. I think I saw the back of Nicole Kidman's head. I think that's the claim to fame for that. I'm gonna say that I think it was her. So it was pretty cool.
Okay, well, a whole different look this time with green instead of white. So, anything else you guys want to talk about before I let your new single, Sugar and Spice, take us out?
Oh, we're just thank you for having us. We're just really, really excited to be back out playing music. We have a bunch of new music, like the song you're about to play from an upcoming record that it got delayed because of 2020, but it's happening now, and we're just really, really happy to be back out on the road and sharing music with people again.
All right. Well, Jocelyn and Chris Arndt will be performing at the Park City Eccles Center this Saturday night. Showtime is 7:30 p.m. Tickets online at parkcityinstitute.org or call the box office at 435-655-3114. Hey, you guys, thanks so much for your time this morning.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And this is our new single, Sugar and Spice. Park City Miners Day celebration is coming back in September. In the studio with details, I have Park City Rotary Club member Tom Kelly. Good morning, Tom.
Morning, Leslie.
So we're still 6 weeks out or so, but you guys figured you could pull it off, huh?
We're back. I think like a lot of things right now, people are just anxious to get back to some sense of normalcy. And Park City Rotary Club has been running Miners Day for many, many years. The festival itself goes back 125 years to the early days of mining history here in Park City. And we looked at a lot of different options. Last year, we had gone to a virtual only running of the balls, and we eliminated the parade in the city park. And we worked together with the city throughout the spring and into the summer. And we've come to the point now where we're comfortable saying that we're back. Miners Day will be here on Monday, September 6th.
Okay. And just like we always knew it,
pretty much. And again, we had grappled with this and looked at a number of different alternatives, but in the end, we really felt that we had a pretty good model. So it will be as it has been in the past for the most part. It will kick off with a breakfast in City Park, thanks to St. Mary's Catholic Church. The Bark City 5K will go off at 8 o'clock in the morning. Bring your dogs. A nice little 5K run to kick off Miners Day. Running the balls will take place up on Main Street prior to the parade. We usually say that's 10:30, but it usually doesn't happen till 10 to 11 or even 11. And we say the parade will start at 11, but it usually starts at about 11:15 or 11:20. And that's the beauty of Miners Day, is it isn't exactly precisely on schedule. And we'll end in City Park. We will have live entertainment, food trucks there, as we did 2 years ago. The one change we are making is with the mucking and drilling competition. We're changing that now to a demonstration, which we think will be better for the spectators there. So we'll be doing demonstrations of mucking and drilling, the mining techniques, beginning at 12:30, same location City Park in one of the parking lots there. And it's just we won't have a competition per se, but you'll still be able to see the same things that we've done in the past.
So you were telling me, though, that you just don't have the competitors. It's just not something people do anymore, huh?
Yeah, this is actually more a situation not really related to COVID, but just that we don't have a lot of competitors. We love doing this, and it's really popular, but we needed to find a little bit of a different methodology. So we're going to take it to a demonstration. There'll be three or four demos throughout the afternoon, so you'll be able to go to the kids' games and then wander over and watch a mucking and drilling demo, or if you want to go and hit that first at 12:30 and come on over and grab lunch at a food truck, you'll have those options.
So are you going to have to pay the guys then to show up? Because they used to come to compete for some good cash.
Yeah, we'll definitely have to pay people to put this on, but that's what Miners Day is about. It's celebrating this mining history of our community. And one of the other elements that's really important to us is to kind of take a step back and really focus on this is a Park City festival. This is a Park City event. It is for our community. It's for our neighbors, and we certainly welcome others, but we're going to tune our marketing to the point that we're really bringing this to the attention of Park City residents, and let's make this our really fun way to cap the summer and head off into the fall.
Okay. Let's see. You are going to have a parade, maybe not starting until 11:15, but people can register at this point?
We actually have registrations open for the parade now, and you know, it's a really economical thing. There is no charge if you and your neighbors want to get together and just come on down the street. There is no charge for that. There's no charge for nonprofits. There is a charge for politicians and corporate floats, but we welcome everybody, and what we'd really like to do this year is just challenge neighborhoods in the Park City and the greater Snyderville Basin and Summit County to get together with your friends, bring your wagons, your dogs, find some crazy, funky costumes, and just walk down Main Street. Pretend you're miners of old or whatever you want to do. This is our town, and let's celebrate it together.
Okay. And then running with the balls, you'll have balls on sale that morning, but you also can get them from Rotary Club members?
Yeah, we actually have balls on sale right now. If you go to parkcityminers.org, you can get balls right now. You have a lot of time. I don't think we're going to run out, but you never know. But running of the balls is the real core of why we do this. This is where we raise our money for our nonprofits in the community. And if we go back a year, we were really struggling as a Rotary Club trying to figure out how are we going to make grants to our local nonprofits who are in the biggest need position of ever. And we came up with a concept of doing limited balls last year. We came up in the dark of one morning before anybody was on Main Street, and we actually conducted a running of the balls that was videotaped and put on Park City Television, and we ended up raising $30,000. And this money went to scholarships for students from Park City, and right now we're in the final stages of our granting process, and we're going to be granting another $10,000 to local nonprofits. So that's really the core of why we do Miners Day. This year, we're going to blow it up again. It's going to be a back-to-normal running the balls with people along the course from top to bottom, and you can get your balls right now, or you can get them from a Rotarian, and you'll be able to buy them at Silly Market in the weeks leading up to Miners Day.
Okay, and again, it is Labor Day for the rest of the country, but it's Miners Day as kind of just a look back at our heritage of what kicked Park City off.
Yeah, we love Miners Day. It's a quintessential Park City festival. There's really nothing like it in the country. And you can go to parkcityminers.org and you can check out the information. You can register on that site to put a float or an entry in the parade, and you can also start to buy your balls for running of the balls.
Okay, anything else?
That's it. September 6th. Mark it down, folks. Miners Day is back.
Okay, Tom Kelly with Park City Rotary. Thank you. The major item for the Snyderville Basin Planning Commission in its meeting tonight is a proposal to amend and clarify the code language for a bed and breakfast inn, a commercial use that has been prompting a lot of discussion before county planners in recent years. KPCW's Rick Bruff has more.
The Snyderville Commission will begin the session on Tuesday, July 13th at 6 p.m. They will be meeting electronically, but staff will be available in person at the Richland Services Building. The county staff is recommending that the Planning Commission hold a public hearing and consider approval for two amendments. The first will clarify the requirement that a bed and breakfast inn must be, quote, owner-occupied. The report said several applications for conditional use permits have been stalled for a number of years, especially on the issue of who will live in a bed and breakfast. We asked Summit County Attorney Margaret Olson if the proposal was a reaction to the recent debate over the Colby School bed and breakfast application. Olson wrote back that she had no comment. In 2020, the Snyderville Commission and the County Council on Appeal denied the Colby bed and breakfast application on the grounds that the plan from the applicant, Hoffvest, did not qualify as an owner-occupied residence. But earlier this year, Third District Court Judge Teresa Welch ruled that county code did not define owner-occupied residence and the Hoffvest plan would not violate it. She sent the project back to the Snyderville Planning Commission, which issued an approval. To prevent problems in the future, the county staff are proposing a revised definition which says a bed and breakfast is used as a primary residence by the owner. The provision also says an owner is a natural person who holds a legal fee simple title to the inn. An owner is not a public or private corporation, firm, or association. The Second Amendment will change the process for handling special exception requests. That's the case where a lawmaking body, like the council, is asked by a person for a special dispensation so the law does not apply to them, for instance, to be allowed a ridgeline violation. Currently, a special exception denied by the Summit County Council can be appealed to district court, or if the county development director doesn't forward the request for an exception, that decision can be appealed to the county manager. The amendment would say there is no appeal option. Decisions by the development director or council would be final. The county attorney's office advised that because the council's decision is, quote, discretionary, they can approve or turn down an exception for any reason, an appeal process would be inappropriate. For KPCW, I'm Rick Brough.
Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher in the studio with me now with an update from the Christian Center of Park City. I have Executive Director Rob Harder. Good to see you.
Hey, good morning.
So let's see. You've got a number of programs going on. Let's start with the Back to School Basics. School starting, of course, here in Park City School District, I think August 19th.
Correct.
So what are you doing this year?
Yeah, we're so excited to be able to offer this again. And this year, we're going to expand it, Leslie, a bit more. And here's what I mean by that. So we've got in Heber, well, about 150 kids in Heber. And then in Park City, we're trying to get every child that qualifies for free and reduced lunch, which the district tells us is about 850 kids. And so our goal is to get all 850 to through the program, and then plus the Heber, we've got about 1,000 kids we want to take through a back-to-school basics program, which is our largest. We were about a little over 800 last year, so it's going to be quite the undertaking, but we're super excited about it because it's such a fun program and a great way for these kids to launch the year, right, with clothes that fit and shoes that they can actually wear.
Well, how does the program work then? I mean, people support it through money, financial contributions, and then you take the money and go shopping?
Yeah, so kind of three ways I would recommend. People can either give school supplies, which you always give to school supplies, backpacks. We want every kid to have a free backpack, a new backpack, as you know, you go through them in a year and sometimes it's they're worn out. But the most important is $100 per child. So our goal is if every child is sponsored by $100, we give $100 to the child to go shopping at the outlet malls here in Park City. And that way they can, you know, get with the discounts that we're able to secure for them, they're able to buy, you know, use a couple of shirts, a pair of jeans, some shorts, maybe a pair of shoes. So $100 per child, that's what we'd ask people to support. You can go to our website. You actually sponsor a child or two for $100 each child, and that's a great way to support this program.
Okay. And then you got volunteers that what? Stuff the backpacks with the school supplies?
That's right. Exactly. This is one because we've done it so many years now. I think this is our 10th year. We've got great support, but we're always looking for more help. I'll throw a couple of dates. You can get this on our website. But in Heber, August 12th and August 14th are the two big days to volunteer. And then in Park City, it would be August 16th, 17th, and 18th. Again, at the outlets, you can help put backpacks together. You can help sort, you know, help organize the different tables to each store at the outlets. We have to kind of direct people where to go. We have Spanish translators as well, so we have a lot of Spanish-speaking clients that come through. So if you have Spanish skills, we'd love to have that. So anything along those lines would be wonderful to get your help.
Okay. And then turning to the Mental Wellness and Counseling Center, you've got a special webinar coming up?
Yeah, so Dr. Sears, you know, she's been a fairly well-known expert when it comes to grief therapy. And so one of the things we provided, Les, we've offered a lot of different seminars for the community at large. This one is specific for providers, so other counselors or people that work with those who are going through grief. This seminar is geared for them specifically. And so Dr. Sears, again, is a specialist, and it's going to go through a special training on grief therapy. It is free, but we do need you to sign up July 14th, so it's coming up very soon, at 9 a.m. Going to be a great resource, though, and we have already had a great response to that. So that may be something where possibly we can bring back Dr. Sears to provide another one because it's such an important topic.
Okay. Again, that's tomorrow then. People can go on the website now and get that information.
That's exactly right.
Okay. And then one of your fall programs, Hike for Hunger, is coming back?
It is, yeah. So, you know, obviously we couldn't do it last year because of COVID, but this year, you know, it's still a little squirrely in the sense that things are kind of getting back to normal, right? And that was an event where we had, you know, 600, 700, 800 people. So we still, you know, it's not quite the same. But what we're going to do, unfortunately, Deer Valley wasn't available at the normal date that we have the Hike for Hunger up at Deer Valley. So we're going to do it at the St. Regis. It'll be at September 19th on a Sunday afternoon at St. Regis. And so that'll allow us to have the semblance of, you know, we can't get as many people at the St. Regis as we did at Deer Valley, but we're hoping to get 200 to 250 people. And it's still a great place. It's beautiful. We'll have a great hike around that area, and then we'll gather for some food and just a great awareness event about food insecurity and hunger.
Okay. Again, people can register for that online as well?
That's correct, yes. You can go to our website, check out Hike for Hunger, coming up September 19th.
Okay. And then talk to me just a little bit about the need. I mean, we're basically, we're open, right? We're open for business. What is it that you're still seeing? I mean, do you still have families out there that are having a hard time?
Yeah, you know, that's a great point. We are open. There are jobs available, right? I think that's a good sign economically. I still think some people, from what we've seen, are still needing rent assistance. They're still needing food because of whatever jobs they do have. Sometimes they're just not at a paying rate that really can help them pay the bills that they have. It's still very expensive to live in Park City, as you know. Housing continues to go up in cost. We found a lot of reports of apartment rents going up significantly. And so they were, you know, at a certain rate the last year, and now it's gone up by 15, 20, 30%. And they just don't have that extra cash. And so there's still a need out there. So I'll let people know, yes, it's getting better for sure, but the rent is going up. And so we always tell people, hey, food, we have a lot of food. If that can save your grocery bill, save some money on your grocery bill, come to our food pantry, that extra money can go to your rent. Because that's one thing that we don't have just inexhaustive amounts of money to help with your rent. All we do, we are still helping people though. But that's an area where food, we have plenty of food. So we encourage people to come to our food pantry. You can come twice a month. We'll give you enough for the whole month. And so that is the reality we're seeing on the ground.
All right. And we still have the eviction moratorium in effect, and yet we're still seeing evictions happening. Are you able to help with that, or do you just turn them off to an attorney or something?
No, we're working with them. That one's been really frustrating, to be honest with you, because, yes, there are still evictions happening. And we're trying to work with county council, city council, yes, legal organizations, just to figure out what are the rights of these various people that have been given an eviction notice. And because it doesn't make sense, but somehow there's the eviction notice is getting around kind of that moratorium. And that's really a frustrating thing, to be honest with you, because this is not the time for kicking people out just to raise your rent to make more money. So that's something that's been something we are working on. Now, we are able to help. So, yeah, if you're listening and you still need rent help, we do have that. Thanks to the wonderful support of this community, we have money available. We can still help with rent. So please contact us. I know Jewish Family Services also has money to help. But it is more of a problem than you'd think. We're hopeful that moratorium actually will be extended a little bit longer until we really get back on our feet economically.
Okay. Anything else?
That's it, Leslie. Thanks so much for having me.
Rob Harder is the executive director of the Christian Center of Park City. Three Park City area residents are now inductees to the Ski Hall of Fame located in Ishpeming, Michigan. KPCW's Carolyn Murray has more.
The 2020 nominees include Hank Tauber, a longtime FIS board member and U.S. ski team coach, Alpine ski racing Olympian Holly Flanders, and recently deceased Howard Peterson, influential in bringing the 2002 Olympic Games to Utah. Executive Director of the Ski Hall of Fame, Jason Koski, said the election process is intricate and they've been using it for decades.
We just felt like they deserved the time on stage, and everybody's been super patient. All the elect have been very patient in waiting for their time to be honored live on the big stage with their friends and fans and colleagues. So Hank, Howard, and, you know, or Howard's family receiving on his behalf, and Holly are all going to be inducted this end of this coming ski season.
Koski said athletes and non-athletes could be nominated. Both Peterson and Tauber fall into the non-athlete category. Nominations are currently underway for the 2021 inductees. More than 400 people serve on a voting panel as they winnow down dozens of viable candidates.
It is a good chunk of work to put a good rock-solid nomination together for a viable candidate for the hall. The rules and guidelines are all available also on our website at Ski Hall, but they end up getting in front of the selection committee. Their packet does, and there's a committee that considers all nominations and votes to build a ballot every year.
The COVID pandemic kept the class of 2019 from being honored in Sun Valley in March of last year. It also prevented holding the 2020 inductee ceremony in March this year. To make up for the COVID cancellations, they'll have two ceremonies in 2022, one in Sun Valley and one in New Hampshire. Holly Flanders comes from New Hampshire, and Kosky said she is still connected to that area. The late Howard Peterson has many associations in Bretton Woods, one of the 2022 induction ceremony sites. Hank Tauber is from New York State and still has ties to the region.
Take somebody that's primarily known in the West or in the mountain region and go east, and there's still hundreds of really close people that show up. We kind of divvied up the class of 19 and 20 between those two based on looking at the dynamics of where their hometowns were, where they're from, where most of their friends and family are, etc.
The Ski Hall of Fame in Ishpeming, Michigan has housed the organization since 1956, and it's the birthplace of the National Ski Association.
A lot of people don't realize, but in 1904, the National Ski Association was created in Ishpeming. The National Ski Association changed their name to the U.S. Ski Team in 1953, I believe, or 54. That was started right there in Ishpeming, and that's why they dedicated the museum and also gave us the green light on becoming the Hall of Fame in 1956 and housing all the legends of our sport right there in Ishpeming at the museum.
Kosky said the ski and snowboard industry is tight-knit and homegrown. Still, the Park City-based honorees, Hank Tauber, Holly Flanders, and Howard Peterson, are recognized for their contributions internationally. Carolyn Murray, KPCW News.